to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Welcome up, Big Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 21. NASDAQ Futures up 111. Dow Futures up 176 as we're still pushing for the more stimulus, another $1.5 trillion to $2 trillion. Does wonders for a market that's a little shady. Frank, how are you?
Very good.
Speaking of shady, Frank, how are you?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you very little, as they used to say, right? So what's up, man? Anything good?
Well, and not too much. You know, I'm recovering from that long jaunt. It was almost 3,000 miles in a car.
Where'd you go?
Vermont, New Hampshire.
Oh, you buzzed around when you were there?
New York. I drove around a lot. It gives me a sense of place where I am.
In the car?
In the car. I get out of the car in social distance.
Now, if you get out of
the nature trip.
Now, if you get out of the car, does that mean you can't come back from one of those states if you actually pay attention to Lori? If you stay in the car, it's okay.
I don't live in Chicago, so it doesn't really matter, does it?
Well, you've been known to drive through. That's another thing. If you drive through, does that mean you have to keep going? What if you stop in Chicago for like a hot dog or something?
You mean like I always do?
Yeah. So what about that, man? If you stop, you got to 14 days. You can't stop. What about a drive-through, like a McDonald's drive-through? Does that count?
Good question.
Not sure if you have your mask on.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the bylines of the rules are.
I thought they changed the rules, didn't they?
No, they keep adding states and pulling states out. They added a couple last week. I think Michigan's back in, aren't they? Or Wisconsin's back in? Wisconsin's back in, I think, is a bad state. You got to keep up on this stuff, Frank. When you drive down the Ryan, it says, or the Kennedy, there'll be a big sign that says, "Oh, by the way, if you come from these states, keep on driving, or if you stop, you got to stay for 14 days, or that would be a sentence, wouldn't it? Having to stay here for 14 days?
Yeah, right now it's the current list, according to Chicago.gov, the emergency travel order. Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia, Idaho, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Minnesota, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, North Dakota, Oklahoma, Puerto Rico, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Wisconsin, and Wyoming.
Well, I understand. We don't want anybody to go to states.
The list is updated every Tuesday and goes into effect until the following Friday. Or it goes into effect the following Friday at 12:01 a.m., it says. And it was last updated last Tuesday.
Do we want any of those people from those states here anyway?
I'd say Vermont's okay.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
New England, no states in New England are on the list.
But now, did Frank have to drive through any of them to get here?
Well, actually, no. Unless he drove through Kentucky, he has a clear shot to come back to Chicago without driving in any of the quarantine states.
And I guarantee you Frank is not going to take a side trip to Kentucky. Just saying.
I do at times. Paducah is on my wife's to-do list or bucket list.
Why?
The National Quilting Museum.
Oh, God. Well, young Pearl, who was in the office here with us, she, long story, just so you know, there's a place for everything. She's from Philippines, half and half kind of thing. Very nice lady, very bright. She is meeting her son in Missouri to pick up a special breed of dog, and then they're driving the dog back to California. Now, Pearl's already had the COVID, right? So she should be able to do whatever she wants, but not the way our lunatics think of it. She still wears masks and all that kind of stuff. So I said, "Pearl, you're skunked for 14 days. "Well, why is that?" I said, "Well, because you got to drive through Nevada, and not even you can tell me all you want. There's no way you're driving across the state of Nevada and not getting the pooch out to pee the entire state. It's too big of a state. Oh, really? What about if we take the southern route? It doesn't matter what route you take. To get from Missouri to California, you gotta go through Nevada. Oh. Hey, so I was giving her no end of grief, but I don't want to see her for 14 days because she got to go home, and even though she already had it, she needs to quarantine, according to Lori. Just saying. All right, Frank, so we had a president seemingly in a little danger last Friday with oxygen levels, trying to get this information. I'm suspect.
Well, I mean, they told us he had a low-grade fever, and then they told us he had a temperature in the 103s. I don't believe a word coming out of anybody's mouth about this.
Well, I'll tell you what, I was listening to, Maddie, were you watching the Cubs, and all of a sudden the game was so bad they cut off the ninth inning to talk about the president?
Yeah, and then we flipped over to ESPN, which, so we only saw 5 seconds of that, went back to the game.
Well, the people that are somewhere, and I don't know how you do this, one of the fixes of this society is you got to get rid of this 24-hour news TV, or not even news, whatever it happens to be. Within a half hour, 45 minutes, every strident would-be expert on anything is on there, giving their opinion that they don't know anything about. I mean, nobody's there. I mean, it's just like everybody's giving their opinion on the latest case with the person in Louisville or something. You weren't there. I mean, I don't know. Frank, everybody's, your friend, Karen, Aaron Burnett, opinions are like bottoms. Everybody's got one and they all stink. You know, it's like, but I mean, how do you have an opinion for something you're not there? I mean, I can have an opinion on monetary theory because I've been studying that my whole life. And even that, you know, I'll have an opinion and somebody else probably's got one that, you know, maybe is better. But how do you have an opinion?
Yeah, but it's never slowed you down in talking about your theory. Nor would I think of slowing you down. Or masks.
I would say, well, no, there's another one on there.
I have my own.
I don't have, you know, I have zero issue going to the Myers and having the people that are older in there, me throwing mine on. I don't have an issue with it. I honestly don't, Frank. But the idea that it's going to be like forever, or the idea that other people get to, and I'm astounded as we've reached a point where every day we click more people into they've already had it file. And when are we going to make some sort of a
test that we can take?
I'm not talking about
a test. If we've had it or not.
I'm saying the people who've had it know they had it, and people have the antibody.
Oh no, they don't. How many people do you think have had it and don't know they had it? If you're asymptomatic, how would you know you had it?
Okay, let's put it this way. I know a lot of people who know they had it, have the antibodies, and are still under the mask law, and they still can't go to work in some places. Why? At some point, we're going to have 50 million people that have had the damn thing, and we're still going to want them at home with a mask on their face. That makes no sense.
I don't know why you can't go to work with a mask on your face.
Why should I have to social distance and wear a mask if I already had it in the antibodies? Because it makes this where we're going with this, because it makes somebody else feel good. There's a lot of things other people.
Because with every right, there's a corresponding responsibility.
I would say that.
Bedrock of America.
You and I absolutely. It all comes down to money, Frank, and the fact is. I was having a long discussion, switch topics, with one of Audrey's friends, and I said, "Well, you know, one day, hopefully, if you go to church on Sunday, wherever you go, if you pray, I don't know, I'm not a big church guy, but not like I wouldn't go. You would love to see no terrorists left in the world, right? All right, now what's the first thing you'd want to do?" If that were the case, if you achieved that goal, you want to bleep can everybody who's in the TSA, right? Oh, no, you can't do that. Well, why? Well, because I wouldn't feel as safe. So you're telling me that if there's nobody around, there's no terrorist organization, there's nothing, we still need the TSA. Well, I feel safer. Yeah, but I don't want to pay for it to make you feel safer if there's no need for it. I mean, this is a it's a big thing, Frank. It's a big deal when other people expect other people to make them feel safer, right? A lot of people. I mean, I would feel safer if everybody only went 70 miles an hour on a Stevenson. I'm not getting my wish, am I? I'm just saying. I mean, once you start going down these roads, all they do is lead to a swamp, for God's sake. I'll feel safer if you wear a mask. Well, fine, don't go out. You know, I mean, I'm just saying. Anyway, but what are we doing with? I'll say this is in the midst of this whole mess, all this stuff going down. The one thing that appears to be to me, somewhat obvious, is no matter what happens. What a bleep storm this ends up being, as long as they're pouring another $1.5 trillion into the place, the market's going to go up for a little while. The $1.5 trillion seems to, no pun intended, trump just about anything, doesn't it? You're not agreeing. Are you there? We lose Frank? Well, you didn't even hear my question. Anyway, but it appears as long as these guys are going to come up with this kind of money. And where do you think that is, Maddie? It looks like it's going to be this week. I think that this airlines is going to be a standalone. They're just going to bail the airlines standalone because I don't think they could wait. Because talk about intimidation. If you don't give us money, we're laying off 31,000 people. Now, do you think Frank, are you back?
I certainly am. I knew I was disconnected when you weren't responding to my incendiary comments.
Well, what I'm saying is, in the midst of all this bleep storm we got going down here, everything going on, we got fires, we got everything, we got the president of the hospital, we've got diseases, we got people yelling back and forth at each other. The $1.5 trillion is going to override all that in the short term, I think. And now what the airlines are getting a standalone package, correct? How about that? We're laying off 31,000 people tomorrow if you don't give us money. We're big enough to push that button. But I don't know, is it gonna be enough, Frank?
No! Of course not.
Or then what happens?
Maybe we end up with a change in leadership. I don't know. Somebody has to do something rather than just throwing money at it.
Well, both sides are doing
that. I haven't heard a plan yet. I haven't heard a plan from Biden's team, to be perfectly honest.
Well, you can't continue.
But I've been promised one for health care and a bunch of other stuff for almost 4 years now. I'm willing to give somebody else a chance.
You've been promised health care reform since Hillary, and you got Obamacare in the middle, which I regardless of what side you're on, now I'm comfortably in the middle. Of course, I'm not in the middle like the big shots. The big shots are in the Green Party in the middle. They're stealing from both sides. I don't get to do that. Plus, I don't want to do that. That's the real Green Party, Frank, because you play one side against another, and you're on both bills. And no matter what, your place gets dull. That's where I want to be. But anyway, just the Obamacare, the idea that you would put through a bill of that magnitude without somebody from the other side being a part of it, I just think that's stone-cold ignorant. I really do. And on either side. Didn't the Republicans do that once and it was a fiasco? What was the bill they did like that? Was it a tax thing or something they jammed through that nobody...
It's called Brett Kavanaugh.
Oh, that's possible.
But no, it's done all the time. And the executive orders have just reached almost a crisis level. And I'm not saying it didn't start before, but I mean, there was lots of whining about Obama's executive orders, and he was a piker in compared to the executive orders coming out now.
I always thought back when we were youths that when you heard about an executive order, it had to do with the executive branch. From when I say that, I mean, an executive order would be something like Kennedy saying, get the missiles out of Turkey. Which he could do because he's ahead of, plus the Congress is probably with him on that. They're just telling the military, I mean, get him the hell out of there, you know? Or if you were Jay Pritzker, you're telling the tollway authority, I mean, get rid of all the documentation for people's tolls after a year like you said you would. I mean, erase them. That to me would an executive order or you're fired. It wouldn't be a, a, a walk around legislation. I don't see how that could, I mean, I don't know how that ever worked. I always thought that legislation had to come out of Congress, but is the problem with the executive branch or the problem with Congress? I don't know. Or both?
Probably both. I mean, are you on any maintenance drugs? And I realize I'm violating your HIPAA. But
I have one high blood pressure drug. That's it.
Okay. Has it gone down in price over past 4 years since we were promised that the multitude of executive orders and deals done?
Did they go down? You're right in my... No. Well, it's, I got a new one. So all the new ones...
Mine have tripled in price.
Well, Audrey, you know, I'm not going to accuse the female of the species, but has a, you know, a few that she takes, and I don't, you know, not, she looks perfect health to me anyway. But she had a couple of, I don't even know if she, you know, they're daily if she has taken, but she had about three or four of them. Remember, even you remember this, Maddie, when the Walmart said for the generic ones were 5 hours a month? What was that, about 7, 8 years ago?
Sounds about right.
I think she's on, like, she and her pals, the group of her, of the female, the gaggle of females, I'm going to say that out of her whole group of a bunch of people, they're probably on 10 of those. And she tells me the average price now is solidly $60 to $100 a month on stuff that was five. Because the, and our buddy Jen Dyer has been a contributor a couple times. Jen knows probably more of about that business than anyone on earth, because he's been in the in that business. What are the what's the pharmacy business? What's the pharmacy benefits manager business, and all that stuff? And if ever there's a guy you want to sit down, throw some money on the bar, and say I'm buying beers, and sit there for 3 hours, just let him talk. It is one of the most educational things you'll ever come across. That is the most cutthroat, crooked industry that ever walked on this earth, and. You know what? I'll say it. I don't care if it's on national TV. I'll say it. The kickbacks. You know what? The whole reason for pharmacy benefit manager. Pharmacy. For those of you who don't know, pharmacy benefit manager is somebody who gets in the middle of, like, they could be a union, they could be a certain insurance company. They get between the drug companies and say the pharmacist, and they get kickbacks from the kickback. Such a bad word. They get compensated. By the drug company.
Aola.
Yeah, they get compensated by the drug company for steering people to certain drugs and certain pharmacies. But the pharmacy doesn't get it if they just go straight to the drug company. So it shows you how much money these people are making on these drugs. There's a whole level
Purdue
of
Purdue Pharma and their OxyContin. That story is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And they got away basically with just buying their way out of it.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, that's the whole
and that's what people mean when they talk about white man advantage or white man privilege. But you can sell an ounce of weed on the corner of Jackson and Pulaski and go to jail.
Well, but if you put an African American in charge of the drug company, he still steals. It's not a racial thing; it's a privilege thing.
Right, right. The problem is privilege.
Right, and that well, you
see, it's as long as there's disparate. Arrest rates for the same thing by race, there is such a thing as racial privilege.
I think, let's put it this way, I know enough about how the minority stuff works in the city of Chicago. There's every bit as much, if not more, privilege there than there is in what you're talking about.
But see, now you're focusing on the blue cities, but... for example, we had that black woman that was driving in Texas in a white city, okay, or in a rural white area. That is an example. You don't go to jail because you know, whatever she did.
Well, I don't.
A white woman would not have gone to jail in that situation.
Yeah, I don't know enough about
it. But it's money, too. I agree.
It's all money. I mean, the idea that... Anyway, what I'm saying is that whole there, every single, the first one I can remember off the top of my head was maybe Bush won, talked about it. Clinton for sure did. Everybody since then has talked about drug prices, price of medical care, and the middle class and how they do all the good work for society. and for the last however many years that is, pushing 30, drug prices have gone straight up and the middle class has gone straight down. And yet we still believe these idiots, or listen to them.
Right. I mean, what's one of the greatest examples of welfare or money transfer? It's allowing people, employer-provided insurance. Come on, take it away. Pay for the whole damn thing. Get taxed on it. And I'm all for that.
Well, I mean, that would
that costs me as much as Obamacare does.
It's going to be, everybody looks at that and they, I think that wouldn't help at all, Frank, to be honest with you. I think you have to get the competition back in the system, which in some areas they are, by the way. In some small areas, as Kevin goes through them, a lot of areas are, some of these areas that are these, outpatient clinics and things like that are actually very efficient, way more efficient than a hospital and the insurance stuff. Not even close. So I still believe there's a way
for that.
I still believe there's a way to get people involved where you can bifurcate. How's that for a word this hour of the morning? You can bifurcate.
That's a great word.
You can bifurcate the system and have people. Well, let's put it this way. Suppose, I'll give you an example. I mean, PTI is a smaller firm. What if we weren't? What if we had 75 people? Let's round it up. Say we had 100 people. Why do we need to buy insurance if we're willing to self-insure? When I say that, name me the two or three things that are the most, that cost you the most in insurance that you can never insure from yourself. It's not a heart attack. You're dead, right?
Right, cancer. Ongoing.
Cancer, maybe two or three, but number one, by far, is a premature baby that has issues.
Oh.
That costs more than cancer treatment for 2 years?
It could be $1 million or $2 if the kid's in there for 6-8 months. It's massive money. Probably crooked, but massive. Anyway, that you need to insure against. But the regular stuff, if you had walk-in clinics where you could just pay cash, and got a real deal on it. When I say a real deal, a fair price. Why wouldn't PTI just insure all that? We will pay the big stuff instead of paying $2,000 a month per employee. We'll pay $800 for the big stuff, and we'll have a $10,000 deductible per person, and we'll just every month we'll throw the rest of the money, the other $1,000. Frank, that'd be $100,000 a month. We could put in a bank account, for God's sake. Well, after a few months, it's a lot of money. That's a lot of tooth pulled and stitches and broken fingers from softball. It's a lot of dough. Now, why can't we do that?
Why can't you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, never answer a question with a question, my mother used to say.
Okay, I'll say a cabal of evil white men. Probably close to the answer.
I don't know if they're white or not, but the idea of having a network. Where if Maddie Weber needs an appendectomy for United Health, the appendectomy is $10,000, and for us it's going to be $50,000 because we don't have a network. Where the hospitals are so in bed with the insurance companies that they have stratified pricing. Which, by the way, is absolutely against the Clayton Act. Absolutely, and they all should be in jail. And yet, goes on every day.
We agree.
Goes on every day. So, I mean, if PTI could send Maddie there with his appendectomy and write the check for $10,000, we'd be happy to do that. But we can't, because for us it's $50,000.
Sure you can. You can negotiate prices with a
you can't,
hospital
no,
before an operation or after an operation.
All right, so
tell you what, I'll pay you $10,000, and they will take it.
All right, so
there's a person that will take it.
All right, let me imagine the scene, Maddie. You can referee this. Because I know that you're going to come in on my side on it. Imagine the scene. Now, Frank's never been known to complain, has he?
Not to my knowledge.
Not to your knowledge. So let's say, for instance, Frank has acute appendicitis. And I say, Frank, why don't you sit there? I'm going to call hospitals all through the Midwest today and find the cheapest guy to pull out your appendix. By the way, here's an aspirin or two, and shut up. How do you think that goes? So we rush Frank into Northwestern, and they go, hey, this guy, if you don't pull his appendix out, he's like dead in 2 days, and give me 3 days to negotiate. I don't think that works, Frank. Just saying.
I did have an appendectomy, and I thought I was out of shape and had a ruptured appendix and was still working out. So that's, yeah, I need to learn to complain. But then perhaps you should cut the deal before the...
Well, that's the point. You shouldn't have to. It should be...
But you have to, and you can cut the deal after the fact.
Frank,
I know people who are self-insured.
Frank, I can't believe you're arguing.
The price all the time.
I can't imagine if you walked into Myers and I walked out with burger at $3 a pound and they charge you $4, how much you'd squeal. I can't imagine.
I've been complaining about the tiered pricing forever, since probably my
first
class.
But you asked me the question, why can't PTI insure themselves or big law firm or something? And that's the answer. I mean, I don't think there's any debate there, is there, Matty? Right? That there's a two-tiered pricing system. We can't afford it.
Oh, it's 10-tiered.
So it's 10-tiered, yeah. Anyway, what's the story with this market? Is there a place here we want to sell? Do we want to just keep buying? I got money to put to work. Do I just pile in here this morning? What do I do?
I think you pick what you think is okay. Well, and which makes it tough, because 20 years ago we heard people, you know, when the dot-com boom collapsed, they were talking, well, gosh, this stuff is trading at 30 to 40 times earnings. And now we have stuff trading 100 times revenue.
Well,
what do you do?
We did back then, too, by the way, 100 times revenue. Cisco was about
80
times revenue.
Yeah, but not to
revenue.
The extent as now, I don't think.
Well, so then...
Not the top five stocks.
Well, your fallback position is putting your money in Schlumberger at 16 or something. These are all companies that are absolutely dead on their feet. Where else are you going to go? I mean, they're not going anywhere.
Well, you got to be nimble. That's what you have to do. You go protected.
Well, that part I agree with.
That's what you have to do, which would automatically throws you into stocks or sectors that are liquid. And
I agree.
If not, you got to figure out what sort of index has the correct weighting to protect whatever you're doing on an individual stock.
We were actually looking for looking to do some stuff in the XLB today. It's one we don't have. I was looking at that. I might do. I'll report on that tomorrow when we do that. Frank, thank you. SP Futures up 22. NASDAQ Futures up 100. Be back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. It's Matt Webber on the board. We have Janet Flanning as well. The futures now up 23 as that futures up 100 as the stimulus package continues to percolate around in Washington. At least some chunk of it's coming out of the airlines. I think in a separate bill is what I was reading yesterday, although I haven't seen it yet. It doesn't mean it's not out there. Dow up 183. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 95.7%. Let's see, up 50.8%. CAC around up 43.9%. In Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 282. That's 1.2%. Those guys were down one day last week. So these guys are up and around trying to follow us. Shanghai down 6.2%. Hang Seng, however, up 308, 1.3. Those guys have not been in sync now for kind of a while. Just as a way of review, Friday the Dow was down 134. The S&P was down 32. NASDAQ was down 251. The Dow and the S&P came back fairly dramatically during the day. The NASDAQ, not so much. Bonds, back up to 0.71, so from 0.64 last week, so we had a little bit of a jump up Friday afternoon. The one minus 0.53, Japan positive 0.02, so nothing much going on there except ours is up a little bit. Oil up $1.59, still nowhere near, well, close enough, I guess, 38.64, but not threatening to go over 40 here. Brent up $1.53, $40.80. Natural gas, 253. That's up 9 cents. That's a lot. RBOB up 5 cents, 117. We've got gold is down 370, 1903. Still holding on to 1900. And we have silver unchanged at 24. Copper down a penny, 296. Matty, what do you have for us on traffic weather sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a good start coming in on the Edens and Kennedy. No issues on the Eisenhower or Stevenson. Southside Expressway is looking good, too. As is Lakeshore Drive, off the expressways, out west, LaGrange Road, between Burlington Avenue and Ogden, there is a closure out on LaGrange Road due to a vehicle on the tracks, apparently right there, and so crews are working to get that off, and it has LaGrange Road closed, so you'll want to avoid that out in
the suburbs. That's right where we played ball.
That's right. And then just northwest of there, Addison Road at Fullerton, there is a crash. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, cool temperatures, but warmer than it was over the weekend, and then will be even warmer beginning tomorrow as we could touch the low 70s throughout the week this week. But today, sunshine, a high of just 62, which is still about 7 degrees below normal, but warmer than, like I said, it was yesterday, so that'll feel nice. Right now it's clear and 42 going up to a high of 62. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 104 today. Right now it's clear and 71. In sports, the Bears suffered their first loss of the season in Nick Foles' first start.
I want Trubisky.
They fell behind 13-3 at half, couldn't do anything in the third quarter, were down 19-3 before scoring a late touchdown and two-point conversion to make it interesting, but they could not recover the onside kick, and that was your final, 19-11. Bears fall to the Colts. The stats were ugly. Nick Foles struggled mightily, 26-42. 249 yards, most of that coming in garbage time when the Colts went to prevent defense. He threw a touchdown late in that game, also had an interception, QB rating of just 76. Bears couldn't run the ball at all. David Montgomery, 10 carries for just 27 yards. That's obviously a 2.7-yard average. Cordarrelle Patterson was even worse, 3 carries for 5 yards for just a 1.7-yard average. Allen Robinson was the only receiver that made any noise, and again, that was in garbage time. He ended up catching 7 balls for 101 yards and a touchdown, but most of that coming in the fourth quarter when the game was already out of reach. Bears are now 3-1, and they have a very short week as they'll play the Tom Brady Buccaneers on Thursday Night Football coming up here in 3 days. Arizona Cardinals have dropped 2 in a row after a 2-0 start. They lost a tough one to the Carolina Panthers, 31-21. Sunday Night Football, it was the Eagles with a big upset in San Francisco, beating the 49ers 25-20. The Eagles earned their first win of the season in Week 4, Chief, and they're in first place in the NFC East. That's how bad the NFC East is. The Eagles at 1-2-1 are now in first place.
The Cowboys, they lost again. I couldn't believe that.
Monday Night Football, it'll be a doubleheader tonight because the Patriots and Chiefs game was delayed by a day as they worked to get coronavirus tests back from all the players after Cam Newton tested positive. Cam will not be in the building tonight, but the rest of the Patriots apparently have been testing negative, and assuming all goes well today, they'll take on the Chiefs. That's a 6:05 Central Time kickoff, and then the regularly scheduled Monday Night Football game will kick off at 7:50 Central Time, so that'll be pushed back about 45 minutes, and that'll be the Falcons versus the Green Bay Packers. NBA Finals, Miami was without two starters last night, and it looked like the Lakers were going to go up 3-0 and be on their way to a sweep, but Miami, behind a spirited effort from Jimmy Butler, shocked the Lakers, won 115-104. They now trail that series 2-1 and are hoping to get at least one of their guys back here for Game 4. Lastly, over the weekend, Chief, I'm sure you saw this, but we didn't get a chance to talk about it yet. Legendary Hall of Fame pitcher Bob Gibson passed away over the weekend. The Cardinals flamethrower was 84 years old.
We will have Mr. Kevin O'Neill calling in at 7 to talk about that. Because he was, talk about a man among boys. That was a dude.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously, it was before my time, but having seen many highlights of him and hearing my grandfather talk about him and the duels between, you know, him versus Jenkins, he said there was no pitcher you feared more than him. Maybe Sandy Koufax, but it was those two guys that you feared that, you know.
Well, Sandy Koufax didn't delight in drilling people.
Well, that's true.
But Pete Lecocq said he threw at him in an old man's game.
But he was just saying you knew that if the other team scratched across a run early, you might be in trouble because those guys weren't getting touched.
He didn't really want to charge the mound because he was a Golden Gloves boxing champ and he played basketball for the Globetrotters. And in this day and age, I'm going to say out of all the pitchers I've ever seen, he would have been the guy that would have DH'd his other 3 days. He was that good of a hitter.
That's just awesome, yeah.
Yeah, it's really something. I mean, and as long away from the field, he was fine. But he didn't fraternize. Here, I was reading about Bob Gibson quotes. I'll save some of these for Kevin. But Dusty Baker sees him in a restaurant, and he walks up to, with his wife. And Gibson says, "Why the bleep should I talk to you?" He says, "By the way, nice to meet you, Mrs. Baker." He didn't like rookies. Didn't like people messing with him outside. He was a strange duck, but. Boy, oh boy. You know, the weird part is his delivery was absolutely screwed up, where he would fall off toward first base, yet he won seven gold gloves when he was totally out of position to catch anything.
Crazy.
Just nuts. And anyway, it was kind of a... John, how are you?
Tom, I'm good. How about you?
Fine. I just... as my man Greg said Friday, can we throw anything more into the mix? Now the president's in the hospital. Are we talking about an earthquake?
Or is he?
Or is he? are we talking about an asteroid
he
today?
He must be feeling better because he fired off about 40 tweets this morning.
Right.
Yeah. Well, when I said he's working as usual, that means he's tweeting. He's not like reading anything. just saying, you know.
He's working by watching Fox and Friends and then retweeting the headlines.
Yeah, that's what an odd world we're in. But, you know, we talk about Frank is, of course, all over on the liberal side. And, you know, it reaches a point where I don't care how many people are from the red or from the blue arguing with each other, and you're in a boat that's sinking. At some point, you got to come together and say, let's turn on the friggin' pump and get this water out of here. I mean, this whole idea I must have listened all day Friday to every one of these, I won't say losers, but people are talking about, well, you know, if we get Biden in, what's going to do to the market because we're going to have to raise taxes. For God's sake, put up the numbers of how broke we are. I understand you can't get blood out of a turnip, you can't just start taxing people, but anybody thinks that either party is not going to be looking around from revenue after this election is out of their mind. Am I wrong, John, or not?
Oh, big money. Well, you know, Ken Griffin just pumped another, $1 million of his own money into the campaign here for the fair tax amendment opposition. As if Illinois fair or otherwise, we're going to be taxed, you know, for the rest of our, you know, generations' lives at the rate we're going. It doesn't really matter which party is running the show. We've got such a hole, you know, it's going to take everybody to fill it. So,
see, now we're getting this is this. I blame Matty Weber and his generation. Not that we didn't
wait.
Not that we didn't, you know, make them that way. Definitions just seem to be shifting. Now, the fair tax, fair would be something that would be equitable for most people, just about all people, where they would say, yeah, that makes some sense. I got to pay for, you know, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, I got to pay for this, and this is the right amount, and it's managed pretty well. Fair now means somebody paying it other than me.
This is an old game, you know, of recent vintage maybe, but it's just getting old, of misnaming legislation, so it's like reverse speech or something. It's exactly the opposite of what the title says.
Well, the Patriot Act ripped away...
No child left behind, or child's behind left, as it probably should have been called. Yeah.
So the Patriot Act... I'm going to say that, 80% of it was taking away rights that we thought we had.
Right, that the Patriots died to give us.
Yeah. I mean, it's it's all in the semantics, you know. The Heroes Act, well, you don't want to be a hero? What's the matter with you? You don't want to be a hero? Patriot, you want some guy with a turban like raping your mom? What's the matter with you? I mean, right? I mean, the communication is just, but I did not know, News Radio 78 lobbed out a pearl this weekend that the two single biggest contributors, plus and minus, this bill are, what's his name, the guy from, you just mentioned his name, on one side, and Pritzker's family on the other. I didn't know the family was pulling up for those commercials.
Oh, I didn't know that either, but that says a lot to it.
Yeah. I don't mean, for those of you don't know what we're talking about, the Illinois in the Constitution, of course there's a lot of things in the Constitution, they have the idea that you can't, no matter how much somebody steals, you can't do, it says you can't diminish somebody's pension, even if it's fraud for some reason. So we have all kinds of people in the state getting paid way more than they should. Plus we have people getting two pensions, three pensions, which I don't think has ever been, anybody ever thought was going to happen, but it really has. But because of that clause, now despite every complaint, despite that the state is now triple B minus rated and they can't pay any of this, the pensions they're going to take us under, we can never have an amendment to change that clause, okay? But now, another part of the Constitution is whatever state income tax has to be, it has to be just one rate. It can be 3%, it can be 4%, it can be 5%. They can raise it or they can lower it, but it can't be graduated. It has to be essentially a flat tax. Whether that's a good idea, bad idea, I don't know. But the fact is, now there's a ballot. On the ballot is a constitutional amendment to change that to where it can be graduated. The idea is the rich people aren't paying their fair share. Now, I don't, you know, whenever I hear this, John, is I think, here's where I'm coming with this. I don't know that it's a good idea or a bad idea, to be honest with you. But what I'm saying is we have, whenever somebody talks about taxes, if they got money, they're talking about income taxes. As soon as somebody shows up with a glass of wine with their pinky in the air and starts talking about taxes, income taxes, I know they're not necessarily a 1%er, but a 1%er wannabe, right? Because if you're up to 45,000 and you got a family or 50,000 bucks, you don't pay any income taxes, pretty much. Now we always have people want to flatten, broaden the base. The fact is, for those of you don't, everybody knows this, you just don't normally think about it, we have four legs to the tax stool in this country. Well, in Illinois, you got a million of them, but they turn out to be part of four. One is your income tax, one is your payroll taxes to the federal government, one is your state taxes, and one is your local. And they're all, matter of fact, you pay more in state taxes, people do, than they do in federal income taxes. So, the idea that the federal, through their income tax, can bail out 50 states when the states are bigger than the federal government is, if you add the payroll tax to it, the federal government's bigger. But the payroll tax is going for stuff. And if people don't pay their Social Security tax, nobody gets a check, right, John? So that's all earmarked, for lack of a better term, to unemployment, to Medicare, and to the unemployment tax actually goes to the state, but it's earmarked for Medicare and it's earmarked for Social Security, correct?
Right.
And so you can't really touch that, because if you do, the checks will stop. So when somebody says, now if we just could raise the state to be a graduated tax, to where, okay, if you're big, you pay 10 or 15%. Now you're running right into the federal part, where if you're big, you're paying over 30%. Which puts you then over 40. But now if you're big, you probably got a house in a nice area, which means you're paying, you know, 50 or something, or 100, where we got those, you're paying on the taxes there. I mean, Audrey was showing some stuff, was she telling me yesterday? Places where the houses are like, the townhouses are like in the mid twos, Jan. The taxes are 10. Well, that's a little rich. That's a little rich. She goes, I can't sell this townhouse. It's one of the nicest townhomes. I said, why can't you sell it? She goes, because nobody wants to pay $10,000 in taxes. So the place has to go. I think everybody disparages, and Kevin not so much, but everybody disparages on the show that we shouldn't be sending people to school, to learn economics and sociology and so forth. It doesn't get them a job, and oh, by the way, it's too expensive. Well, I'll go with the too expensive part. But I absolutely vehemently, and one thing I will disagree with anybody ever on the show, to the mat or to the ropes, is the last thing you want to do is have a stupid population. The last thing you need is for somebody to get on TV and be able to rattle off ignorant economics and not one person in a group of 100 saying, God, that's ignorant. Because I honestly think people are supposed to learn something somewhere along the line. And I don't care if you're a plumber. It doesn't mean that you're supposed to be, you don't know anything about sociology or economics or philosophy or religion or, you know, whatever. Maybe you'll say not religion, but at least know what it is. You know what I'm saying? Doesn't mean you have to go to church. The idea that you know, as long as you're welding and drinking beer at night and watching football, you're okay. No, I knew an awful lot of welders at Pullman who were pretty damn smart. And all they did, go home and read, you know, when they weren't playing softball. So, I mean, the whole idea, but this is voodoo economics these guys are throwing at people, I think. Anyway, I'm not talking too much. What do you make of all this?
Well, it's the proxy battle that I think is curious, because here you have two billionaires on opposite sides of the question, throwing their own personal fortunes in public relations, you know, efforts to either get this amendment passed or voted down. And I can't pull back far enough to see what the heck is going on to explain that. I do think, though, that there's a lot of people who are poised to leave a state like Illinois that doesn't have its financial house in order by any stretch. And when they see the writing on the wall in an amendment that pretty much is going to soak the rich. I mean, that's really what the advertisements for it are saying, that the rich should pay their fair share. And I just find that ludicrous coming from the mouths of the Pritzker family. So maybe they will see some benefit of it, but I think most people who don't have a Pritzker-like fortune but have enough that they don't want to see, you know, just piddled away in taxes, are going to get out of here. And I would, if I were in that group. I would think, you know, if the purpose is to soak the rich, I don't want to be one of the people being soaked. So I'm resistant to this whole tax idea as any kind of solution. I think it's going to deplete the sources of income or money that the state needs desperately. We need more of that, not less of it.
Well, Jan, it's a social and a moral thing, because when you talk to any one of these, and I'll use the term morons, when it comes to taxation, it essentially is, no matter at any level, let's identify stuff that I either don't do or identify people that I think have more money or have some money than me, and let's attack them. Whether or not it's like an alderman who has a limousine that wants to raise the parking taxes all the time because he never parks. Or he wants to raise the parking meters because he never had a parking ticket in his life that he couldn't fix.
Right.
Right. So that's what we get out of these small-minded people that we put in. And now, for some reason, people who make 50, 75, 100, if somebody makes 200 grand a year, they're all of a sudden rich. Well, I got news for you. You're not rich.
Right.
Because if you have a decent house someplace, and the weird part of it is, you would think, I mean, Frank's always talking about white man's privilege. If you live in Lincoln Park now, and you have a kid that's pretty smart, if you decide, now you might be paying 25, 30, 35 grand on your house for taxes, which is a lot. When you're like, there's not even a park really around to have, for the kids to do anything in. If you want your kid to go to Walter Payton and the kid is smart enough, oh no, no, we have to take people from all around the rest of the city. We got to be divergent or inclusive and so forth, which I am not against at all. Okay, I'm just saying that's what people are doing. All right, that's fine. But now we've got the person who is paying 35 grand a year in property taxes. And all of a sudden, his kid gets bumped by somebody from another area where they're paying 5 or 10. Not saying they shouldn't. That's privilege. I'm not going there. But my point is now, let's see, on my 35 grand doesn't even get me an education. I guess I could trap the kid back into some place where he would never go because he should be in Walter Payton or Jones or someplace. We could drop him back into, you know, whatever, Inglewood or someplace. I guess we could do that, but I'm probably not going to. So all of a sudden now the kid's going to go to Latin or someplace or to Catholic school. Well, now I'm paying my 35. I can't get into the school. And oh, by the way, I'm paying another 25 to go to St. Ignatius. Okay, so let's say I'm making 200 grand. Well, there's 35 going here after tax. So I'm making 200. I'm taking home, I'll use this outside term, I'm taking home what, 150? All right, so 35 is going for taxes. Now 25 is going to St. Ignatius. That leaves me 90. My mortgage is 5 grand a month. Let's see. Where are we eating? We better go buy a bunch of potatoes because that's all we can afford. I mean, it starts to pile up pretty damn fast, right, Jen?
Yeah, and, you know, the idea of these being privileged people, when you factor in all of the ways that you overpay or double pay for things that other people aren't, you know, they're not high priorities. You know, getting your kid into a good school matters a lot to some people. It matters apparently not at all to others, and that's kind of the way it's always been. But you are being taxed, you know, exponentially because you have dreams for your kids and you have expectations of safety and, you know, all the things that go along with being in a prosperous, you know, level of society. And I think you're kind of being punished for wanting those things.
Well, one of the guys who lived two doors down from Dr. J, this is a long time ago, it was 10, 15 years, the guy pukes out his house and he's, you know, it was on this big block in Lincoln Park, so he gets, you know, whatever, 800 grand for the thing. And I don't know what he paid for it. So he says, okay, I went up to the North Shore and he buys some place three times bigger for like, you know, 600 grand or something, or 650. And he goes, my taxes are half, and now my kid's going to New Trier for free instead of me paying to go to Walter Payton or paying to go to Latin, which is 25,000 a year or 30 plus all the parties I got to go with a check and so forth just to get in. He goes, now I feel rich for the first time. I feel like I got some dough. He goes, I didn't have anything over there. I mean, I didn't have a place to park my car. You know, these people are out of their mind. I mean, what they think they're charging for beer. Now all of a sudden there's no jobs here. I mean, and all of a sudden, what are we doing here, Jen? I mean, is there any common sense in any of these? We got Lori, we got Tony Preckwinkle, that if you're not female and you're not black, don't even attempt it. I mean, do they really think that they're that smart that they're going to take this all over and make this all right? They're going to make it right for them. They're going to do the exact same thing that they're accusing the white people of doing the whole time, right? Is make it right for them.
It's the Coleman Young phenomenon in Detroit, who, I mean, single-handedly pretty much turned the city into what his vision of a city should be. It didn't fit with a lot of other people's visions. They got out of town, and now you have Detroit, which, you know, has, I think, come back somewhat from where it was 20, 30 years ago, but it's still got a long way to go. But Coleman Young didn't see anything wrong with what he did, I don't think.
No,
this was part
no.
of his dream, to make it this, as preposterous as that may seem. He'd probably think he did a bang-up job of getting just what he wanted. And I wonder sometimes if people like Lori Lightfoot and Tony Preckwinkle don't think much the same way.
Well, there's a... Well, I think that, you know, again, you can't be... Mr. Number Cruncher, like I am all the time. I wouldn't really wish that on anybody, Jan. But But it's always in the back of people's mind. Why would I live? Well, I mean, if you're young, okay, if you're 30 or 35 years old and you're single, there's a lot of reasons to live in Manhattan. All you gotta do is walk out the door and look around. There's a lot of reasons to live in Manhattan, right? For both sexes. And, there's a bar in every block. There's a good restaurant everywhere. Yeah, you know, I can't think of any place more fun to live. Or downtown in Chicago or the West Side if I was 25, right? I mean, they did all that whole Fulton area. I mean, what could be nicer, right? But the point is, why are people here? Why do you put up with this crap? Why do you put up with, you know, somebody dying to put a parking ticket on your thing in front of your house? Why do you pay these taxes? Why do you pay 11% sales tax? I mean, all this. Why do you put up with it? You put up with it because you can get a job here that pays 2 to 3 times more than it pays in Centralia, Illinois, right? That's why you do it. I mean, am I wrong or not?
Well, people are going to, you know, from Centralia to Chicago. It's never been going in the opposite direction.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, you do that because, by the way, I mean, you can come here because all the good-looking girls are here, the good-looking guys, and the Cubs are here, and, you know, whatever. They can't hit, but they're here. But by and large, why are you here? You're here because you're making 3 times as much, correct? And in New York, it's 5 times as much.
And you got interesting, fun ways to spend that money.
Right, and you got interesting, fun ways to spend it. But strip the income off, and all of a sudden you sit there and go, wait a minute, why I got a 25-foot lot. What am I doing paying 25 grand in taxes? The people in my block, I'm sure they haven't had it the last summer because of COVID. Many years ago, I'm walking poor Scruff, my dumb little terrier dog, down the block. And, of course, just because I get up at 5:30 every morning, Scruff was up at Saturday. And so we get on the block, and I'm going, there's all these people in lawn chairs waiting at the front of the park. And I've been here all night. These people are yups that are making God knows what. I mean, these are movers and shakers in Chicago. I mean, not the guys in the heaviest law firms. I mean, real income people. Not that they should be in a break or anything. And they're sitting there all paying an average of probably 30 grand in property taxes. And they're waiting in line in the little toddler park to get their kid to be able to go to the sprinkler in the summertime. And I'm going, wait a minute, let me get this straight. I'm paying you bleeps 30 grand and my kid, there's not even enough room for every kid on the block to go to the sprinkler in the summertime. I guess it's cool. Everybody's having coffee and talking and enjoying themselves, meeting their neighbors and so forth. I bet they had a nice time all night, but I'm sitting there going, this is pretty foolish. You know, I mean, really? S&P futures up 21, NASDAQ futures up 92. We come back with Mr. Kevin O'Neill for a few minutes to talk about the life and times of Mr. Bob Gibson, that whole era. And we'll only be a few minutes on that, and we'll talk more about the markets. And we had Mike's on later, right?
That's right.
And so we'll talk volatility, because volatility, I got to ask him some questions, because, boy, I'm doing stuff for my clients, and the volatility spiking up near this election is making it very difficult to put positions on. And I want to make sure I do this right for everybody, because there's always a solution here. There's always a way to make money. And anyway, we'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now.
There's something happening here.
Lower North Bank Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Just remember on the board, S&P futures up 20.75. They've been there pretty much since last night, pretty steady. NASDAQ futures up 89. Now, NASDAQ was down over 200 on Friday, so they're not bouncing back near as much as the Dow is now up compared to Friday, and the S&P is about even, but the NASDAQ is not. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Matt. Good morning, John.
I think you guys are using this as a way to just, the conservatives, to gang up on the man in the middle,
We can do that, yeah.
I like the idea of the Green Party, that whenever, if both sides start shooting, I'm just going to sell bullets to both sides. That's what you do in the middle. The Green Party. I like that.
It works. I've been sporting the giant Meteor bumper magnet, all year long. So that's where I want to go with it. And it started out as a political statement, but now it just is a commentary on the whole year.
Well, you remind me of Joe Pesci and my cousin Vinny. Can we heap anything more on what's going on?
What finally clinched it for me? I was kind of riding along with 2020, saying, "Okay, I'll remain optimistic. We'll get past this." And then just a couple of days ago, I had the local classic rock station on, and they played a Poison song. Now, the day Poison's music became classic rock was the day I decided that we are not a civilization worth saving.
Anyway, I mentioned I sent you guys an email this weekend when I saw the headline about Bob Gibson and sent it out, and I said, there's been, you can name a lot of things in sports when you get to be my age that you knew were just very special. And, a lot of them won. Basketball, I would say, would be watching Austin Carr, watching Michael Jordan, maybe Wilt, Oscar Robertson a little bit. Just people that were just kind of a step above. Obviously, I drove all the way from South Bend to Arlington Park to see Secretariat, and that was worth it. There hasn't been another one like him either. I'm going to say there hasn't been another one like Bob Gibson. I mean, even as a kid, the thought of when he was pitching against Fergie Jenkins, the games used to take about an hour and a half, an hour and 40 minutes.
About that, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, just two spectacular multi-sport athletes. Fergie Jenkins was a basketball player and a hockey player, right? And Bob Gibson was a Golden Gloves boxer and played for the Harlem Globetrotters. And I'm going to say that even though I can't find the stats, Kevin, they got to be someplace, that he would probably be one guy in today's era that would have DH'd the days he wasn't pitching.
Yeah, you're probably right. He was a really good hitter. Actually, Fergie was a pretty good hitter, too.
Yeah.
You get a lot of the multi-sport athletes who actually were. But if you look at, I do have his baseball reference up, he was a career 206 hitter, but he had years in the middle of his career. For instance, 1970, he actually hit 303 on the season and had a 751 OPS. So, not bad for a pitcher. Not bad for your ninth spot in the lineup. And he had other years when he was in the 240s. There's a 260 in 1962, so... Yeah, he was a pretty good hitter.
And the who was it that there was? I dug something up over the weekend. I was looking for it here, and I can't find it. But it was all kinds of anecdotal quotes, Bob Gibson quotes from other people. But evidently, one of the people that he couldn't stand or whatever it was Pete LeCocq. Remember that guy? He started out as a Cub.
Yep. So yeah, I'll tell that story because I did dig it up and it's very good. The thing to know about Bob Gibson, first of all, from my point of view, he is the best pitcher to this day that I have seen in person. So I didn't see Koufax, so I can't.
Me neither. I never saw Koufax,
but I've seen a lot of pitchers over the years, a lot of really great pitchers, you know, dating back to in that era, Drysdale and Juan Marichal, and then you know, coming forward, I've seen Seaver and I've seen some of the great pitchers that have come along since then, right up to modern day. And Gibson was just jaw-dropping to watch him. I remember, and he did this all the time, but I remember one game against the Cardinals and Cubs, and I was actually in St. Louis for that game. And it was a tight ball game. Don't remember the score. Maybe it was 3-2 or something. But Billy Williams came up in the eighth with men on base and two outs. And Gibson had been throwing hard. He had a tremendous curveball too, but he could really throw hard. And he's been throwing these fastballs the whole game, dominating the game. And then he got to a game situation, and out came a fastball like nothing you had seen the whole game. That you have that in your, you know, that arrow in your quiver in the eighth inning, that's just amazing.
I'd say Billy Williams was a few guys that could actually, of all the people who maybe could hit him, he was right up at the top.
Yeah, he probably was. And Billy Williams was a great hitter, in you know, a Hall of Famer himself. So the Pete LeCocq story goes like this, that actually it starts with Billy Williams. Billy Williams broke his ankle, and so the Cubs brought up Pete LeCocq, who was a lefty, because they wanted a lefty hitter for the lineup. So they brought him up, and his first game, he came in, and he was hitting against Gibson, and he thought they'd just walk him because first base was open. And that didn't happen. Gibson said, "No, I'm pitching to the rookie." So he pitched to the rookie. First pitch, base hit, game over, and the Cubs won. So the way LeCocq tells the story, he says about 3 weeks later they went to St. Louis, and he was batting third in the lineup and against Gibson, and starts looking for his bats, and they're all gone. And Billy Williams had taken them. Williams said to him, "Pete, you have a chance to make baseball history. Just go up there without a bat and stand there, because he's going to hit you anyway." And LeCocq said, "No, it's, you know, that was weeks ago. No, he's not going to do that." So he goes up, first pitch into the and he hits him. So he says, next time, he probably figured that everything would be fine, that, you know, it would be over now. He throws another one about 2 inches below where he hit him the first time. But you fast forward, they had Bob Gibson Day in St. Louis several years later in 1975. He says he was playing out of the bullpen at the time, but in a 6-6 tie. This is at the end of Gibson's career. They started him warming up. The bases were loaded, nobody out. Gibson comes in, first guy pops up, second guy strikes out. I'm the next hitter. The count runs to 3-2, and I hit a grand slam to beat him. So that was the last pitch he ever threw. Then you come forward to about 15 years later. They're doing an old-timers game in Royal Stadium. People like Bob Feller said he walked up to hit, and when he gets up to the plate, Gibson comes out to the mound. Goes to the mound, starts warming up. He's wondering what's going on here. First pitch, Gibson drilled him.
Didn't Pete LeCocq have some, as I recall, he was a very good-looking Californian guy. Wasn't he married to some movie star?
No, he was the son of the guy, of Peter Marshall, the guy who hosted Hollywood Squares.
Yeah, well,
he may have been married to a movie star.
He
certainly ran in those circles.
He had some smoking hot wife. For sure. Not that that's bad. You know, I just he came up with a legend, shall we say. So Gibson was probably hitting him for all kinds of reasons. But you get whacked by a 96-mile-an-hour fastball, that's got to leave a mark, I would think. Yeah. But, I mean, in 1968...
And Gibson is known, of course, for the first thing that pops to mind for a lot of people is his 1968 season. And that was the year he had imagine with a 1.12 earned run average how you lose nine games, but but I don't think that was his fault.
We had 13 shutouts.
The shutouts were amazing. He had 13 shutouts. Yeah. He had 28 complete games that season. He struck out 268 guys, walked only 62. Just awesome. And that was the last year of the taller mound because of Gibson and several other pitchers. Denny McClain had his 30-win season that year. Pitching was dominant in 1968, and they lowered the mound as a result of that. So you figure, well, if they lowered the mound, that would probably hurt his effectiveness. But then in 1969, he went 20-13. He had an ERA of 2.18. His walks and hits per inning pitch 1.1, and still threw 28 complete games, and struck out 269, walked 95, and that continued for a few more years. But then at the end of the year, at the end of his career, it started to trail off. But even so, you can even go up to 1973, and he may have only won 12 and 10 on a not so good Cardinals team, but he was still a 2.77 earned run average, a 1.1 WHIP, and he still threw 13 complete games. So even as an old man, he was pretty darn tough.
Well, and in deference to the guys like Webby, the Mr. Stat guys that are not into this, the ones and losses so much. Here I'm going to throw you one, Matty. I'll make your own argument for you. Things I'd have to do for you. In 1968, he was 22-9 with a 1.12 earned run average, which I guess is 304 innings. That's a lot. And he had 13 shutouts. But get a load of this. 28 complete games. So he completed six games that he lost. But can you imagine that in today's world? But 2 years later, in 1970, when, let's say, he wasn't as good because his earned run average is now 3.12 instead of 1.12, he was 23-7. And he only had three shutouts instead of 13. So let's say he was still pretty spectacular, but nowhere near as good, yet his one and loss record was a lot better. So I mean, the Cardinals, I think, were a lot better in 1970 than they were in 1968. Is that a fair statement?
That is a true statement.
Yeah. I'm going to say the other guy that I watched a lot, somehow or other, Kevin, we got our 305 tickets in 1983, maybe. I probably saw, for whatever reason, the Phillies were here a lot. And I probably saw Carlton pitch 5-6 times. I'm going to say that he was not as good, but he was pretty close. And another guy who was, 6-6, and nobody charged the mound with him either because, he was a 7th-degree black belt or something? And another kind of mean guy. I don't think he talked to anybody.
Yeah, but I don't think he had – I think one of the things that distinguished Gibson was that he was – so mean on the mound. Now, Steve Stone talks about this a lot as a commentator now, where he thinks baseball's changed for the better because it was a very mean game in those days, and that wasn't necessarily a good thing. But Bob Gibson was a total badass. If you went in and just started digging a nice little hole for planting your back foot, you were going down. There was a story that I saw that Willie Mays told. He said he walked in as and started digging in before it occurred to him that he was, oh wait, that's Gibson, and he stepped back and kind of filled in the hole, and then Gibson hit him anyway.
Well, but the difference is that Gibson had a bat, right? So I mean, if you wanted to really take out retribution, they could throw at you.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, and some people did. I mean, right? I mean, why throw at the other? I remember one player saying, "Hey, look, if somebody hits one of our guys, don't throw at me. Throw at the other pitcher. Throw at our pitcher. He's the one hit the guy, right?" Anyway, but it was it was just different. Now nobody was in the parks in those days. I mean, the 1968, the upper deck was only open on weekends. I mean, Even the Yankee days, where the days when Mays and Duke Snider and Joe DiMaggio were all playing, or Mickey Mantle were all playing out in New York, and everybody would argue about nobody filled up, Kevin. I mean, people worked all day. I mean, it wasn't mean, people love the, they listen on the radio and stuff, but you didn't have, you know, corporate sponsors and corporate this. I mean, even when, what did Brooklyn Dodgers used to draw? If the Cubs drew a million people, it was a big year. Same way with the Sox.
Yeah, it was a big year. Yep, it was. Regarding hit by pitch, Gibson only got hit 8 times in his career. 3 of those were early in his career in 1962. So I think after that, everybody was afraid to start anything with him, too. What's also kind of interesting is that Gibson had 3 years, 3 different seasons when he had wins above replacement. So this is, you know, this is compared to the average player. How many more wins did you bring to your team specifically? And he had, in 1968 it was 11.9, 1969 was 11.3, 1970 was 10.1. A pitcher pitching every fourth day was good for, in 68, 12 more wins for his team compared to an average player. That's just an awesome number.
What was Carlton a year in the Phillies where he won like 20-some and they only won like 45?
Oh, I would imagine that was pretty high, so let me do a quick search on Carlton.
Kevin, while we have you, we'll let you go here in a sec. What we continue to our theme seems to be differences between the regular economy and the stock market. Now, no matter what seems bad to happen, layoffs and the job report was pretty awful on Friday, as detailed by Carl on Friday. Once the stimulus plan is out, can there ever be another one, or is this it? I mean, and then is it finally going to be time to sell, maybe, or not? Or are we just going to keep buying? While you're looking stuff up, tell us what the market's going to do as well.
Well, like, I'm your guy to tell you what the market's going to do. I don't think so. So, you know what? It's going to be weird for a little while. There's going to be pockets where it's pretty good. I just think it. You know, there's just going to be because, you know, there are certain industries that will do okay. But I sent you an article. Yeah. I think it was New York Times over the weekend, and they're talking about how much this is causing industries to consolidate, and the obvious one out is restaurants. You know that the small restaurants are just getting killed right now, and the big restaurants, the big chains, you know, have the wherewithal to survive it. But this, it's the same thing for retailers. This, you know, if you're any kind of small retailer, you're in trouble. If you're a big chain or an online retailer, then you're in pretty good shape.
Well, I think that's probably true. Anyway, Jan, thank you very much, Kevin. We got time.
Where's the Carlton 72 wins above replacement was 12.5.
It's got to be
went 27-10 for a really, really bad. You know, actually, his wins above replacement when he went 27-10 probably should have been 27 on that team.
It's got to be a record for a pitcher. It can't be anybody higher.
That would be an interesting one to check.
Well, Kevin, thank you very much.
I'll let you guys go. Yeah. I'm hogging up John's time, so I don't want to do that. I will catch you all Wednesday.
Well, we don't normally do this for a player, but he was a special player, so whatever. RIP, Bob Gibson, shall we say. Jan, as you know, my constant question every day that everybody's here is the more and more I spend time reading about the 20s and the Depression, I just wonder if, I mean, this all has to connect someplace. And I do agree that there's been a shift, like Kevin just said, in the people that, you know, work at home easier, the Zoom, those kinds of people. But I also know, you can't just keep buying them. Okay, 50 times revenue, 100 times revenue. I mean, these are good companies. They're going to do fine. Amazon looks like they're obviously going to do fine. How high can they go? We're talking about a guy the other day. They're going to go to 6,000. They're going to go to 5,000. I mean, we're going to have one company left. I mean, what do we? The goal here. It's almost like this weekend. I was listening to the sniping about Trump being in a hospital and people, you know. He deserves it. He didn't wear a mask. He did this. He did that. And I'm tempted to put out something here, and we probably should. Stacks and Jacks. The people, and you know, Frank is right with that group. The people who want to make all these rules for people with this COVID. I really would like them to tell me exactly, not just mouth it, to write down on a piece of paper what exactly their goal is. I mean, what do they think they're accomplishing? Because I'm in the same spot with this as I was in April, Jen, when I first started reading, or in March, first started reading all the studies from overseas. My thought was, it's not containable, unfortunately. Just like a cold, just like the flu. The idea of an area gets a few positive tests, you jam people home. I mean, now you do that, you're doing it to slow the spread. Are you doing it to stop the spread? Are you doing it to, when you let people back out again, which you know you have to do, do you just put it off? What is your goal? Are you trying to keep it under a dull roar until a magical vaccine shows up? At least that I can understand. That would be a goal, okay? Are we trying to keep it away from me personally by making everybody else stay at home until there's either a vaccine or enough other people got it to where they can't get it to me? I mean, I honestly don't know what the goal is, do you?
No, and the way the language has been sort of picked up and forgotten along the way, remember all the talk about, you know, all we have to do is flatten the curve, and then everything will go back to what we had, and, you know, we just have to get through the next, you know, 14 days or whatever. And none of this has, you know, they don't even want you to think that that stuff was ever uttered or that people actually bought into it, because it just seems like it's from a remote century. So it's so far back in time now, and so much has been thrown around, and there's been so much blather since then. But I think if you really ask people, do you have a picture of what this is supposed to look like after all of the things that you've done? Are we on track to getting what you want or what you expected out of it? I would say that the people who really are behind it would say, of course, we're right on track. This is going to result in a society that's been completely cowed and, you know, shamed into obedience, and it's the masked versus the unmasked. And if we can get people to do that, we can get them to do a lot of other things. And I would suspect that, you know, way above my vantage point, there's somebody who thinks this is exactly what we've hoped for all along. So it's on somebody's timetable. They're not letting us in on what that timetable is or what it ends up looking like. But I think we're really on target here somehow.
But John, I mean, if you look at the logic of it, we got 300 million people, roughly. If we had 300 million well-stocked mountaintops, okay, that we could send somebody up to for 6 months, and they come back down, would we expect the virus to be gone? I mean, it's not here anymore. Do we expect to come down and it all died? I mean, if it was a bubonic plague, you know, bubonic plague, all the rats are dead. I mean, what's our goal here? I don't understand what it is. I honestly don't. I mean, it's not like I'm criticizing. I just, what? Okay, that person's. Do we have him, John, or no?
Yeah, here.
I mean, this is not being frivolous. I mean, I don't know what. We're all gonna hang in place for 6 months. We all did that. We all shut ourselves in. No garbage pickup, no food, no nothing. We better hope you had enough. We'll go back to the fallout shelter time. There's enough wafers and water for everybody to go inside for 2 weeks, in a subway or another building. And by the way, we test everybody on the way in. If you got it, we kick you out in the street. But because right now you can't even go home without somebody at home having it, right? So, I mean. So now, I really want to know what, before you know what your details are of the plan, you need to know what the plan is. I mean, what is the plan other than accusing people of all kinds of stuff? I mean, do we think if everybody sheltered enough and everybody wore a mask for 6 months, it'll be gone? Or we're going to have a vaccine that really works 100% of it? I mean, I don't get it. I really don't know what the plan is. I mean, I'm being very honest.
Someday or some week when I've got, you know, a couple hours to talk about it, what's happened with my niece, who's a senior in high school here in, you know, suburban Chicago, what she's gone through to try to get a testing date for the ACT would seem to be disconnected from any of this, but it's intimately connected with it, because there have been, I think, five test dates where the test was canceled within 12 hours of the start date of the test. And this is after you have to get on a waiting list to go, you know, into other states to get, you know, a test spot to go in in and actually take the ACT. So, you know, the net result of this is that a lot of people aren't going to take the ACT, and that's going to change college admissions quite a bit. And, I mean, that's been talked about openly, that a lot of schools don't look at the tests, you know, now. But the whole mess with COVID has fed into this very neatly. And, you know, they've used all sorts of sort of, I think, you know, things that are not what they seem to be. You know, we're closing this test site, but we can't tell you 48 hours ahead of time, so people show up for their kid to take the ACT, and there's nobody there to let them in, and they find out that the thing has been canceled. Well, that's just messing with people for no health reasons, or they don't even say that it's health-related. So, but it's part of a bigger plan, and COVID has enabled them to do this under some kind of cover. So it's not just, you know, the shaming people or the people working at home or whatever. There's a big seismic change going on in the way people's, you know, college plans are being made, what college will be, what college will cost, who's going to pay for it, whatever it is. And I can't even get a handle on how big and wide-ranging this is going to end up looking like.
Well, it seems to me that right now, you know, if I had to say, I would say that the right now, my view of this is it's probably not as bad as the 68 flu when we were in high school.
I don't think it's anywhere near as bad as that was, Tom. I remember that, and I knew people who were really sick from that.
But it happened all at once. The good thing is there. I mean, the interesting part about this, and I mentioned it earlier that they think that 65% of the people that have this, these are from foreign studies now, don't infect anybody. But I don't know that flu's ever had, or we didn't have the capability of it. The amount of these super spreaders, I find it very fascinating, don't you? They think that virtually everybody has been infected by 10 to 15% of the people that have it. It just, like, erupt with these germs all over the place, and other people don't. I mean, this is by far, I wonder, I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist that this thing was made on purpose, but it doesn't act like any other disease either. I mean, it's all over.
No, and it's not being played out or you know, used as a way of intimidating people the way diseases were before. Even the Spanish flu didn't result in this kind of draconian measures against people.
Well, John, we'll talk to you next week, bud. Have a good week. Maybe I'll even see you one of these days.
You too, Matt. Thanks.
S&P futures up 19. Nasdaq futures only up 76. They're only back a third of what they were on Friday. Come back, Mr. Mike Hart. We're going to talk about volatility. He's going to solve all my volatility problems. He's the man. We'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Long run based on Jacks. I'm Tom Alley. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Mike Hart with us as well. It's SP Futures up 21 now. NASDAQ Futures up 82. Ruben Harrison's, the NASDAQ has leaked a little bit, but the S&P's has been right about here now since last night. Dow up 193. Individual stocks in the Dow pushing it up. A lot of the ones that were down last week. American Express up. Amgen up. Apple up. Caterpillar up. I think about every single stock in the Dow actually is up. Salesforce up $1.66. Everybody is pushing for this new amount of money coming in through the stimulus package. You know, if there is one, but I think there's going to be one. Over in Europe, we've got, in fact, I can't imagine them not being one here now, but DAX up 91.7%, FTSE up 47.8%, CAC around up 41.8%, so pretty much even across the board there. Not so in Asia. We got, of course, these guys have been up and down all over the place. They're always catching up. Nikkei was down last week, but now they're up 282, 1.2%. Shanghai down 6.2%. And we've got, actually, they're closed today. I've got them closed today, so let's delay that one. Hang Seng, however, is up 308. That's 1.3%. Not sure why they are closed, but they are closed. Bonds up 3 basis points at 0.72. That's the highest we've seen in a little bit. Bund 0.52 negative, so that's up a little bit as well. Japan positive 0.02. That's unchanged. Oil, we've got oil up $1.59, but still got down to like $37, so was way under 40, so we're halfway back to 40. 38.64. Brent up 152 to 40.79. Natural gas up 11 cents. That's interesting. Maybe because it's kind of chilly, maybe. It's 2.55. RBOB gas up 5 cents to 117. Gold is now up 290 to 1910. Silver up 12 cents, 24.15. Copper down 3 cents, 293. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're off to a great start for a Monday morning on the area expressways. Absolutely no delays to speak of out of the ordinary on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower and Stevenson have been quiet all morning. There's a bit of a slowdown on the inbound Dan Ryan as you approach the circle, especially because there's some road work on the Roosevelt exit that folks are used to taking, and you can't take that on either side right now due to that construction. But no delays as far as accidents or stalls to report. Suburban tollways are all quiet, too, and even off the expressways, we don't have anything to report. So everyone behaving themselves so far on a Monday morning. Weather today, lots of sunshine. We'll warm up just a little bit, and then we'll be even warmer throughout the week. Today, we'll reach a high of 62, which gets us back up into the 60s, as it was colder than that over the weekend. But our normal high for this time of year is still about 68 or 69, so we're still below that. But we'll get back to normal beginning tomorrow. But today, sunshine with a high of 62. Right now, it's crystal clear and 43 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 104 today. Right now it's clear and 72. In sports, the Bears dropped their first game of the 2020 season, losing at home to the Colts yesterday. 19-11 was the final. The game really wasn't that close. Bears defense kept the team in the game, holding the Colts to a bunch of field goals, but the offense couldn't do anything except for a late touchdown and two-point conversion when the game was pretty much out of reach. The Bears now have a very short week as they'll play Thursday night against Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, looking to bounce back as they're now 3-1, and depending upon what the Packers do tonight, they'll either be in second place or tied for first if the Packers should lose. Cardinals lost two in a row. They dropped to the Panthers 31-21. They're now 2-2. Sunday Night Football, it was the Eagles upsetting the 49ers in San Francisco 25-20. Monday Night Football is a doubleheader tonight. The Patriots-Chiefs game that was scheduled for yesterday was moved to tonight because Cam Newton tested positive for COVID. No one else has tested positive yet, and so they plan to play at 6:05 Central Time, Chiefs versus Patriots. And then the regularly scheduled Monday Night Football game will be at 7:50 Central Time, Falcons at the Green Bay Packers. NBA Finals, it was the Heat upsetting the Lakers 115-104. Heat were without a couple of starters, too. They trailed that series 2-1. And as we touched upon at the top of the hour, Bob Gibson passed away over the weekend. The Hall of Fame pitcher for the St. Louis Cardinals was 84. Jake.
What is wrong with the Cowboys? Every year they have all these players that are good, and every year they buy more people, and then they're never any good.
Good question. Their defense is awful. Their offense has been great this year. It's putting up a ton of points, ton of yardage. Dak Prescott's been pretty good. They have a really good running back, really good receivers, and their defense just can't stop anybody. And they've played a relatively tough schedule, but, I mean, man, they lost. The one game they won, they were down by 20 points against the Falcons.
They got the kid in the middle from Notre Dame who's all world.
Yeah, they can't stop anybody. I mean, they have some good individual players, but as a whole, that defense has been really bad.
Mike, how are you?
Hey, doing fantastic, Chief. How's it going today?
I was almost going to call you yesterday and lead the cheer. We want Trubisky. We want Trubisky.
His Buffalo Bills are 4-0.
Mike is he's dying to be the most popular man in Chicago, who is always the second string quarterback.
That's right.
Just saying. Now, your Bills, have you been a loud Bills fan this whole time, or are you just kind of sneaking it out of the closet this year?
Oh, I've always been a loud Bills fan. Yesterday, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to see the whole game, but you know what? We won, which is amazing. We're off to the best start in 12 years, 4-0, and that's actually pretty amazing, and it's really nice to see us beat the Raiders finally.
All the old guy quarterbacks and stuff that are in doing a halftime show said, you guys are for real.
That's nice to hear. That's starting to be the chant going around that this time it might be for real. So, hey, we'll see. I think we need a couple more games under our belt, and then we're off to the races. And hopefully, you know, just getting in the playoffs for us is a huge, huge deal. I think we've only done it once in the past almost 20 years. So it's a big deal if we can just get in the playoffs.
We have my question to you, and I might as well just ask it right out front, since you are our apostle of Vic, shall we say. You're on the blue cow are actually doing something where the Russell's our theoretical apostle. So I got two guys. As you know, I like to buy, you know, since a lot of my clients are retired and so forth, and have amassed some wealth, which is nice. You know, one of the things you have to do for them is to protect it if that's what they want. I mean, a lot of people don't, but some do. Well, traditionally, when we started our Protected Index program going back to 97, if you bought a year and a half, 2 year out leap put, it was roughly, I'm going to say, somewhere between 8.5% to 11% of the price of the underlying. So if you thought the market was going to race up huge, you bought the put, you bought the stock, or the spider, or whatever it was, and in 2 years, if it went up 10% a year, and you paid a little for the insurance, and you didn't cash in on it, and made a little less than the next guy, it's assuming we couldn't sell calls and mitigate that cost, say we didn't do anything, you weren't all that unhappy. You know, it was like a guy buying collision insurance on his car and not wrecking the car. You obviously,
exactly. I mean, that's how options really got their start. It's a form of insurance for retail traders.
But now we're running into this, and again, I can't emphasize more, and I think Mike will agree, you cannot just look at this VIX number and say, that's the price of insurance, that's the volatility level, because if you go week to week, and the spider, in fact, has, you know, expirations every couple of days, if you start marching out here, I mean, I was looking last week, I don't have my volatilities up, well, they don't come up until stuff comes out, but I think I was looking, I have virtually all my people, my insurance is on October 30th, because I did this a while ago, and I have, to be blunt, I mean, to be full disclosure, I have people both ways. One is that the people who want to invest normally are long the future, or long the ETFs, we're long the puts, and we're short some calls, maybe. Some people, we aren't short at all, they want to be aggressive. Some people, we have repair strategies, and we're trying to double. In other words, we do all kinds of stuff with the call side. But we also have some people who have big money. They want to actually play it the other way, Mike, where the skew on the puts is usually sometimes 4 and 5 vol points higher than the calls. So they actually want to buy the calls, short the ETF and sell puts, thinking over the long pull they're going to grab that extra few points of volatility. We've been doing it for a while. You know, we'll see. But my point is, when you start walking out here now, it's like, you know, 22% vol on on the 30th. Then it's like 25 the week after. And if you start talking about 2 weeks after the election, it's like 37. And it really kind of hanging there till the end of the year. And I don't see how in the hell I can buy that, buy insurance at that number for just a regular person.
I understand completely what's going on is, and I mentioned this before, and so the election is acting like a binary event right now. So basically you have it one way or the other when it comes out, and you have a lot of volatility going up until the election and post-election, give it a month or two after the election, you start seeing the VIX curve or the volatility curve go into really strong backwardation. So that means right now in the front you have rising volatility, and it rises this week to next week to the week after, and it kind of levels off around there until the election, and then we have what's known as a volatility crush. The volatility crush is once the number or the earnings announcement, or in this case the election results, comes out, there's the expectation that since the unknown is now known, the volatility is going to get sucked out of the market in the form of a volatility crush. So all those short options out there are going to profit because your short volatility get paid for volatility contracting. And the long options are going to lose premium value, but they're going to protect you on any large move up or down. So the long options are acting as that protection exactly. And this is one of those times with this kind of uncertainty where a program like you have, Tom, is really one of the best ways to protect assets that are already in the market, where you're buying puts, you're financing them perhaps with calls. I understand those who just want to buy the puts. Personally, I would never just buy the puts. I'd always add the calls, but that's my risk level. We all have different risk levels. And then the idea of selling puts to finance long calls, well, that's really aggressive. But if you're right on direction, you're going to get paid really well.
Well, here's what I my sense is, and again, I'm asking the question because, well, I don't think any of us really know, is I'm looking right here at the November 20th puts on the Spider. Now, the Spider's, well, it was 334 Friday night, say. Well, the 324 puts in November 20th are like $10. Well, that's a lot. So I mean, you know, we're talking about a Spider here. that's a month and a half away. I mean, it's so you could conceivably have this thing drop $10, and oh, by the way, suck on your $10 on your insurance and not have it. I mean, you could lose 20. I mean, which is a big number. It seems to me. Well, let's put it this way. It's obvious to me, my opinion is obvious, obviously. How's that for a stupid statement? If all of a sudden Biden wins, okay, by on that day, by enough to where nobody cares about the mail-in ballots, if that's possible with so many mail-in ballots, I think that the volatility drops like a rock. I mean, the market may go down, 5% or something, but I think the volatility of the puts will drop dramatically. I think we're being priced here for this thing still dragging around in the middle of September. And I don't know how to play that. I've never even come close to playing that before. I mean, intentionally, we did that with the Bush Gore, but nobody even thought it was a possibility, so nothing was priced like that, right?
Right. I mean, my older brother, he was looking to protect his portfolio as well, and he called me and asked, he's buying long puts, as a way, in case when this election announcement comes out, we don't know which way the market's going to move. I mean, Trump could win and the market could rally. Biden could win and we could see the market tank. It's really hard to predict market direction. So if the market tanks, you want to have those long puts on to protect you to the downside. They're so damn expensive. So my recommendation is finance them by selling calls if you're going to do it. You already have the long stock. In his case, he had, I think, 500 shares of Spider. He was looking to hedge. So, you know, that's pretty easy when you have a round number of 100, 500,000 shares. 100 shares is equivalent to one option contract. So if you're going to hedge 500 shares, you do five put contracts, and you sell five calls to help finance. You're not going to finance them completely,
right?
If you go equal deltas because of the skew, but you could always, if you wanted to, you could adjust those calls so you are going equal. You're doing it basically for nothing, but remember, there's no free lunch here. It's all risk reward. So you're adjusting your reward level if you're trying to finance it completely.
Well, the education level here, Mike, and we might as well be both very specific about it. The education level here is don't be listening. Why do I keep saying this when I shouldn't? The buffoons on TV, they will talk about the market is going to have more volatility. Don't use that nomenclature at all, because they are two separate things. There's price movement and there's implied volatility movement. So what I'm saying is if Joe Biden wins, and people don't like the fact that Democrats getting in there, the Spider could be down 4% instantly. Okay, but if the VIX, if the implied volatility, I don't want to use the word VIX either, drops from 35 to 20, your out of the money put could actually go down. So you can't, there are two separate. And if you listen to people all day long, Mike, other than listen to guys like you and me, everybody blends the two together. They're not. They're separate, correct?
That is absolutely correct, which is why we've seen it this year. We've seen a really great example of the market going higher. This should, if volatility and price were related in that sense, market going higher should equal volatility going down. Not even close to the case this year. We're seeing market rally with volatility going higher. So we cannot assume that market going down or market going up is necessarily going to cause the VIX or volatility to react exactly that way. It's implied. Implied means we're taking it. That's an unknown number that we're taking from the equation to basically equate what an option is worth, called the Black-Scholes model. The implied volatility, we actually, it's an unknown that we are able to derive based on that equation. And really, although there's a high correlation with price, you cannot make the connection that it is going to be an outcome of price movement. So all you have is a high correlation that typically when the market goes higher, volatility goes lower. Typically when an asset moves higher, volatility goes lower. But there are tons and tons of examples where that's not the case. So we have to go really based off what the market is implying volatility's level to be at right now, and that's the number that we've got to use. We can also take that volatility number and put it in like a percentile to give us sort of context around what that number means relative to the past year.
Well, just as a way of putting it on a screen, if you had a screen that could do this, like I said, a Spider right now is 336. Well, Friday, you know, obviously open lower today because we're up. The 321 puts on November 20th are open at $9. Okay, now it'll be lower because we're up. And plus Trump didn't die. So they'll be lower. The volatility might be a tad lower than implied. So they're going to be, now when you say to yourself, all right, I'm going to put a 336 price in to my model and say, where were those puts? Well, if the volatility, implied volatility for today, Friday night, was 35, you can't be putting that 35 in there for today because we made it through the weekend and the guy's okay, right? So the volatility, yeah.
It's absolutely going to reflect market sentiment, and you have a weekend of time decay. There's a lot of factors that are changing.
Right. But if all of a sudden today we come out with a volatility of 28, that put that if you put in there at a 35 saying, well, that's all right, I only lost a buck, you may find yourself losing $4 and say, hey, what happened? Well, you screwed up. You picked the wrong implied volatility for Monday, right?
Right. And remember, if you buy a put, it is very much affected by direction, right? You long a put, you need the market to go
right
down. But it's also affected by implied volatility, which is what you were talking about earlier. Look how puts are super expensive right now, and that's a result of high implied volatility. So the market could go down. It could go in your favor and say, I should be making a bunch on these puts. But actually, no. You know, volatility may really increase, especially if the market's going down. And all of a sudden, you're right on direction, and you're completely wrong on implied volatility. It went the opposite way. You're short volatility. You need volatility to effectively, you really need it to not go down, and it does. All of a sudden, your long puts are out money, even though you are correct on direction.
Well, if you're this is what makes it very difficult if you're, protecting people's portfolios, which is what I do and what Mike obviously understands. If you and I just thought, okay, we're going to go from, you know, the market's going to be, say, 310 on November 20th. We could buy, you know, we could if we wanted to. We could buy, let's say, the 335 puts, sell the 310 puts. So now we're buying one that's expensive, selling another that's expensive, maybe even a little more expensive. So we're cutting out a lot of the expense out by buying one and selling another. Right, yeah. But now if it's somebody's portfolio, if it's your dad's, Mike,
yeah,
if it's your dad's portfolio, what I'm also telling your dad is, I'm so smart, I think we're going to go down, but we're not going to go down past 310. Well, you know what? I'm not that smart. if the last thing I want to do, it's like saying, don't worry, your Mercedes, if you get into you're going to cost $100,000, don't worry, if you get in an accident, you're probably only going to be a fender bender, and it'll be $20,000. We'll only insure $20,000. And all of a sudden, like some of the cement mixer rolls over on the thing, and it's smoosh on the pavement. Well, the $20,000 doesn't cut it. It will most of the time, but that's the problem, is not most of the time. So if the thing's trading 250, your dad says to me, well, I thought we were insured. I said, well, you were down to 310. He goes, well, that's not helping me much down here. You really can't do that for somebody with the underlying, right? But if you and I were just speculating to the downside, the way to get around it is to do a spread, right?
Absolutely. Spread is defined risk, right? So you know going into it exactly the most, the maximum amount you can lose, you know the most, the maximum amount you can make. It's kind of a nice, clean way to trade options, especially if you don't. If you're not in there specifically to hedge a position, not that you can't hedge a position with a vertical spread in that sense. Now remember, if you buy a put, you are short, you need the market to go down, so it's a bearish position. But then you sell a put lower, you're financing meaning you're paying less now by that credit amount for the long put. So you're making that purchase cheaper. But remember, when you're just long a put, it's going to protect you the whole way down. When you are long a vertical spread in that scenario, it's only going to cover you the width of the spread minus the debit. You're going to be paying a debit, so you're not receiving a credit. You're going to minus the debit paid on the width. So if it's a dollar and it's $5 wide, so the most you can make is $100, or the most you can make actually is $400, and the most you can lose is that debit paid of $100.
Well, Mike, in terms of, shall we say, intelligence, study, homework, or arrogance, it's one thing for you and I to say, this market looks pretty friggin' high to me. I'm going to go short. I'm going to buy some puts, right? I mean, you may or may not be right on that, okay? I mean, by and large, you're right or right probably, what, half the time? They say even a blind squirrel finds an acorn every now and then. I mean, you're going to, you know, but talk about arrogance squared, where if I were to say, boy, this market looks like crap, this SPY is not going to, it's not going to go, you know, it's 336. Boy, that's too high, but once it starts going down, it's only going to go to 310. Well, that's like double arrogance, right? You know, I not only know the direction, I know how deep the pool is. I mean, that's interesting. It's even, I mean, that's hard enough to do, right? Because you and I, of course, if we did a 335, 310 spread, the thing's sitting at 250, we're going to be, you know, kicking ourselves about why did we just do a spread? Why don't we just buy the damn puts, right? So I mean, it's real hard to be right on all this stuff because there's really, it's not just one. I guess the theme of this whole half hour with Mike is, Mike, there's really what? How many variables flying around here? Not one. There's like five.
Right, and which is why you have to, for me personally, you've got to get the noise out. You can't rely on your gut. Your gut is, I mean, it should be right 50% of the time. My experience is my gut's about 33% or something. I mean, it's hard to call these things correctly. Now, I'm not saying don't trade off of an assumption. If you have an opinion, trade off of that opinion. But the fact of the matter is, the best way, in my opinion, to gauge this market is through that implied volatility level and that implied volatility number, and to make your trade based off implied volatility. And the question you got to ask yourself, is volatility high or low? And how are we going to do that? We're going to look at a percentile or an IV rank number is what I use. And it's going to tell me, is it high or low relative to the past year?
Hey, Mike, what do you say we continue this tomorrow, bud, because you're on tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll be on tomorrow.
Tell us all about this IV rank stuff. Where you got SP Futures up 21, NASDAQ Futures up 89. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's, get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.